is the Revisionary Podcast with your host, Juan Carlos.
The Revisionary Podcast.
Hello, 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 Revisionaries, and welcome to another episode of the Revisionary Podcast. And as always, I'm your host, Juan Carlos. So, if this is your first time listening, the way this podcast works is we bring on guests, usually comedians, who tell a nonfiction story about their lives in which they wish things had gone a little bit differently. Afterwards, I give them an opportunity to tell the same exact story, except this time they can change any facts or details that they would like about the story. Pretty easy peasy, so I really enjoy that. These past few weeks have been a lot of fun, honestly, so I just wanted to share them with you. I've had a lot of interesting experiences. Let's see, where should I start? Well, first, I actually started a TikTok. I'm learning how to use it. I'm really bad at it. I'm putting out videos. I don't know how people do some of the more advanced things, but once I figure it out, watch out, world, because TikTok videos are coming. I will be a TikToking. So that has been a lot of fun for me. You know, it's Juan Carlos Comedy, just like all my other stuff. So you guys, if you so want, you can follow me and watch my videos. Let's see what else. In the past few weeks, I've had the opportunity to sit down with Nicole Anthony twice. So for those of you guys who have been listening along, she was a guest on our live episode of the Revisionary Podcast, which was a lot of fun. And in addition to that, she actually invited me to be a guest on her show, Hello Friends, which was also a lot of fun. So make sure you check out that episode. That was pretty cool, sitting down with her and getting to meet her co-host, Eric, who was a lot of fun. So we've been doing a lot of that. And honestly, the other thing is I'm excited that, you know, things are going up and around, and I'm fully vaccinated, so I've done that. So I'm, you know, all in on the live comedy, and I'm actually putting on shows. I've been trying to raise money for charity. As you guys can tell, I kind of enjoy trying to give back where I can. I do it via this podcast. You know, I'm always encouraging you guys to support different charities, and I let our guests pick the charities. But in addition to that, I actually just got into an arrangement with this brewery called Narrows Brewing in Tacoma, Washington. And they're actually letting me put on a show once a month there, where each month we're going to be raising money for a different charity. So that's really exciting. I got dates throughout the end of the summer. So make sure you check it out if you're in the area. Just come on down. Say hello. Come meet me in person. Let's take a picture together. And we're actually raising money for a lot of good causes. Like, for example, next month in May 15th is the next one at Narrows Brewing in Tacoma, Washington. I'm actually raising money for one of the charities that I learned about via this podcast, which is Charity Water. So that should be a lot of fun. So if you're around, like I said, come say hello, come check it out. And I'm also really excited for the guest this weekend. We actually have Kenneth McLaurin, who is a pretty cool guy. So I met him in such a cool way. I'll tell you a quick story. So as I mentioned before, my little brother's graduating from Cornell. Very proud of him. And while I was trying to find a way to perform in Ithaca, New York, so that I can, you know, see my little brother, it was just an excuse to visit him, quite honestly. But I put out feelers and I started asking around, and actually Madeline Smith, who you guys know from the podcast, she introduced me to Kenneth and was like, hey, here's a guy who might be able to help you. So I chatted with Kenneth and we hit it off immediately. I'm like, oh, this guy's really cool. I actually really enjoy him. So we worked it out. He invited me up. I performed during Chili Fest, which was pretty awesome. And went up there. It was actually... So here's the thing. You learn when you perform in different cities, different things about, you know, different cities, whether it's the demographics or stuff like that. What I learned is apparently I should have water on me at all times, especially if I'm going to perform someplace with a higher altitude, which I did not account for. So I was actually doing the show, and mid-set, I started dying. I was like, couldn't breathe because of the altitude. Like, I just did not account for it. So I had to order water from the stage. I'm like, hey, someone send water ASAP. It was just a bad, it was not a good look. You know, and the worst part about it is I'm sitting there choking, and people are just laughing hysterically. They think that it's part of the act. They're like, oh yeah, he's joking around. I'm like, no, I'm actually dying up here. Literally dying up here. But those are just some of the, like, cool stuff that happens, you know what I mean, when you get to perform in different rooms and different areas. So that was cool. You know, it's a story. I kind of look back on it now and laugh. But anywho, without further ado, let me go ahead and get Kenneth on the line. Hello, Kenneth. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. What's good with you, Juan Carlos?
I'm doing phenomenal, and thank you for coming on the Revisionary Podcast. Welcome to the Revisionary Studios.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here in the studio.
You made it. You made it. So what have you been up to?
Oh, man. What have I not been up to? Actually, I'm really excited about all the projects I got going on. My favorite one is Black Ass Trivia. I got this virtual trivia game that we're doing. We just did the first one last month. The next one's a couple of weeks, and it's Black Ass Trivia. Now, that's Black Ass, A-S, not A-S-S. So it's not black, you know, yeah. Not Black Booty Trivia. It's Black Ass Trivia, like the trivia game that is as black as being late to your own funeral. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
So it's a cool virtual trivia game that we got going on. It's better than any trivia game folks have seen online. We got audio. We got video. My wife is the co-host. It's the blackest trivia game. We give away money, so I'm excited about that. Then got some other projects going on, man, where I got some grant money this year. Kobe was trying to hold the brothers down, but eventually the New York State Council of the Arts and the Community Arts Partnership came through and hooked the brother up with some grant money. So we're going to make a short film.
Oh, that's what's up.
Yeah. And then we're going to teach like eight kids how to make little digital stories. And then also we are going to film a movie, hopefully this summer, that we got money to film last year, but COVID like threw us under the bus. And then also we got an all black everything arts festival virtually coming up in the end of May. So it's a lot of things your boy Kenny Mack is doing.
Let me ask you a question. You opened up by telling me that you're doing black ass trivia, and I'm trying to figure out where in Central New York did you find more than three black people to hold this trivia party? Like, what is going on there?
Well, yeah, so check it out. This is the cool thing. Like, we do it virtually. We do it online.
Oh, I see.
So at the last one, we had folks from Erie, PA. We had some people from California on. We had some people from Trumansburg on. We had a couple folks from Ithaca. So we get people from everywhere, man. It is like, it is the blackest trivia we got out there. Every question is melanated.
I feel like outside of California, you just named a bunch of places that wish they could find other black people. Like, that's what I heard the entire time.
I don't know, man. So my wife is from Erie, PA.
Yeah.
And every time I go there, I get the feeling they wish that there was more white people around.
Let me rephrase that comment. What I meant was the black people there wish there were more black people around. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know, man. Erie, you look around, you'd be like, wow. Maybe like one white guy would be good in this neighborhood.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. Absolute absurdity. So you said you were also working on a movie. What could you tell us what that's about? Can we talk about it?
Yeah. We got a couple of things going. So last year we got funding. It's a guy I work with. He's part of the Token Artist Collective. You know what I'm saying? Get down or lay down. Tag strong. What's up? But we wrote a movie, a little short flick called 10 Skits About Race in America. And we were supposed to film it last year, but we're going to film it this year. And then last year during the COVID, when COVID hit, I put together another short. What was it called? The anti-racist comp. So you think you're an anti-racist competition?
Sure.
And it was cool, man. I dug it. We promoted it as a competition for anti-racist, like a dunk competition or a skating competition for anti-racist. We asked people to like join in, and we were gonna like have a live Zoom thing where we're gonna pick the most anti-racist person in Ithaca. But it was really a script.
Sounds hard.
Yeah, it was so funny. It was really just a scripted bit I wrote. So it was like 45 minutes where Like, everybody knew the answers and everything they were going to say. So it was just like a really long skit. So that was fun. But in the end, so I did that. We did it online, and it actually got a pretty good reception. Somebody from one of the papers watched it and gave us a review.
Right.
The paper. And so I wrote a grant to, now we're going to try to film it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a film it and then make it into a nice movie instead of some shady thing on YouTube.
Okay. That sounds big. That's pretty dope.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, it's cool, man. I'm really excited about it. It's intimidating, but I think I got it, man. We're going to do it. So, yeah, it's a lot going on. And I'm really excited about the Black Trivia. That's the fun thing.
That's the one that gets you. Look, yeah, man,
I have a theme song. We made a theme song for it.
You know what? When this is done, we're gonna have to share that theme song on the Instagram page so the fans can hear it.
Oh, most definitely, most definitely.
I want to make sure every single revisionary out there gets a chance to listen to it. So let's jump right into this, because for background, like, you know, I love talking to Kenneth. I feel like we'll talk for like 2 hours if I don't like just jump right into this.
Oh, you're right. We will.
We really will. So, Kenneth, the stage is yours. Go ahead and tell us your story.
Well, so my story starts off in Benin. In Benin, West Africa. I was there because at the time I was working for a refugee resettlement agency called Search World Service. And what we did was, if you were in one of the 46 sub-Saharan countries and you were eligible for resettlement in the U.S. as a refugee, what we did was we went to where you were, we helped you understand and fill out all the forms that you would need for the interview with the immigration officer. We listened to the story that you were going to tell them and helped you document it and translate it into a way that Americans will understand it. Then what we also did was we would bring in the interpreters and arrange all the logistical support. So when the American immigration officers came to do the interviews, bam, like they just came in, bam, they sit down, they would interview like 10 families a day and just like sort of make it easy. And we were doing that work in Benin, and we were working with Ogoni refugees from Nigeria. And these were some really cool cats, man. Some really laid back, cool cats. And the interpreter that I used to work with always talked about Nigerian movies. He was always like, oh, Kenny, you got to come check these Nigerian movies.
Wait. When was this?
This was in 1998.
Oh, okay. So way before I was born. Got it. just kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah, man. This was in 1998, like way before even like people in Kenya. So I was living in Kenya and we traveled to Ghana. Now, even in people in Kenya didn't know about the Nigerian movies then. Like, mm-hmm. This was back in the day when Liz Benson was like the hottest Nigerian movie star out there, right? You know what I'm saying? In all the movies. So I was chilling in Ghana. And it'd be after, like, we'd finish a day with the interviews, and we'd be sitting, like, outside of the compound under the tree drinking some palm wine, and the guys would just be talking about these Nigerian movies.
Right.
And then he was like, all right, I want to bring you one. So they brought a movie. I don't know where they got this movie from, but we didn't have any place to watch the movie where we were. So they brought the movie to the compound, and we went to the movie theater. So at this time, the movie theater was like, it was cool though, man. It was just like a small tin shack that had like a 24-inch TV in the front, and it had uneven wood benches set up in like stadium row seating, and you probably could sit like 12 people in it. Mm-hmm. So he took the movie down there, and it's like we rented the place for a private VIP sort of screening. Sat in there, watched this movie called Piccadilly Circus.
Okay.
Nigerian movie called Piccadilly Circus, one of the best ever. At the beginning, it's a scene where a huge mask is smoking marijuana, smoking a joint.
Right.
It's great. It's great. So we're watching, and I was like, oh, my God, this movie's so good. This movie's so good. And he's like, hey, Rasta, because I had big dreads at that time. He was like, Rasta.
I see.
You don't see now, but you believe me.
I wasn't going to say nothing. I was going to let that rock.
Oh, no, man. You're probably like, what? No, man. I had dreads, man. I had a curl. I had curls. I had a perm. I had it all. But, he was like, Rasta, man, you need to check out all these movies. If you go to Lagos, you can just get them all. You can just get them all. And I was like, dude, it is no way I'm going to Lagos, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, Lagos, they kidnap everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, they kidnap Jesus. I was like, I'm not messing with Lagos. And he's like, oh, man, it's cool. We'll go with you. I can take you. I was like, man, you're a refugee. You can't go back to Nigeria. Kill you. I'm not going with you. I'm like, you're here because, like, they're trying to kill you and you ran away. I was like, me going with you is like a target on my back. And he was like, that makes sense. And then, like, this would, I probably not shouldn't say this, but at the time I think to myself, now this really makes me, like, believe your refugee claim a lot less. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And he'd be like, I can never go back. They'll kill me. Unless, you know what I'm saying, they got a hot movie out. I'm back for that. But he was like, nah. So check this out. He said, what I can do is I can give you a boy I work with to take you to Nigeria. Take you to Lagos. And after, like, we were there for probably a month. So a week of being in the bush, being sort of bored, drinking a lot of palm wine. It was one weekend. I was like, bam, you know what? Let me try this Lagos thing.
Right.
So he was like, all right, I'll get you the kid. I came up with the plan. I was going to Lagos. I was going to Lagos, and I was going to tell them I'm a Liberian refugee, and I have an opportunity to go to the U.S., but I need to get my papers from the Liberian embassy in Lagos. Mm-hmm. That was my story. And then I also just needed a whole bunch of money or to bribe my way through anything that will come along. And so the way you do it is you get your stack of cash and you put it in small little bundles and put the bundles like everywhere. So have some in your pocket here, your front pocket, some in your socks, some in your underwear, like little under your hat. Just hide money everywhere. So whenever you go someplace, you are always giving the person the last you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're always giving them the last you have. So you'd be like, here, and they'll be like, we need more. You'd be like, I don't have any more. We need more. I don't have any more. We need more. Ah, okay. So then you go to another pocket. This is the last. They'll be like, all right, go. So this is, I was prepared. Money all over myself in
right.
pockets and crevices. My story about being a Liberian refugee. Bam, I had my Nigerian guide with me.
Hold on. I gotta ask, and excuse my sheer ignorance, because I legitimately don't know. You telling me you walked through and you blended in and no one knew you were American?
Oh, yeah. So nobody knew I was American, but they knew I wasn't Nigerian.
Got you. Because
I wasn't Nigerian. I got East African.
Uh-huh.
I got a lot of East African. I got some Central African. But, like, nobody thought I was American.
Okay. Because I feel like people look at Americans and they know. I feel like something about the way Americans walk or the way we, like, conduct ourselves and our body. Like, people look at it like, nah, bro, you're an American.
You know, it's funny. It like, in Kenya, when I was in Kenya, like, As soon as I got to Kenyan, I got out of the plane and walked around. Folks were like, oh, you're an American. You're an Akata. But when I was in Nigeria, they were like, you're not a Nigerian. And that was enough.
Sorry, I distracted you from your story. Keep going.
You know what I'm saying? It was like, oh, you're not a Nigerian. That means you're a victim. Like, that was enough. You know what I'm saying? But everything was cool until we got to the border. And like, yo, Nigeria is just the border is so, so cool. So the first thing they do is you have the border, like
right.
Legal border, right? It's like a road and there's like the border stop and you can drive and you walk and you go, right? Now, right beside the road, is the illegal border.
Okay.
Right? As in, like, if I'm standing here, if I'm standing on the road, I can put one foot on the illegal border and have one foot on the legal border route.
Okay.
They're right beside each other, dude, parallel. Right.
Okay.
And then there's actually more people walking on the illegal border than there is on the legal border.
Why?
Apparently because people don't have documents.
Gotcha.
And are doing illegal things. Yeah, like people are just doing things that more illegal things at the border than they're doing legal things. And so on the illegal border, there are several bandas, like little grass huts all along the border. And so what happens is, as you walk by, there are guys standing outside and they'll look at people and then they'll just be like, you come here. And you go in the hut and they'll be like, you're under arrest. I'm so and so and so. You're on the illegal border. Give me money. And you're like, okay. And you give them money. And I remember somebody was like, what? That's bribery. I'm like, no, you just paid a fine. Like, I was doing something illegal. He caught me and he was like, pay. I was like, yeah, I just like here on the spot. Fine. So like that happens as you go across the border, and each banda closer to the border is somebody who is more and more important. Mm-hmm. So they get more and more money. I got to like the fifth one and the dude looked at me and looked at the guy I was with. And he was like, you know what? This guy you're with is a car thief. I know him. He's one of these young kids who come back and forth and steal cars in Nigeria. I wouldn't trust him. Like, you go to Nigeria with him, he's going to kill you.
Oh, no.
Then he put the kid in handcuffs, in like old, like 1870 handcuffs, like manacles, not even handcuffs. He put him in some manacles, put him in a corner, and then pulled out a rubber whip and beat him
with
it while I was standing there, right?
Yeah.
And in my head, I was like, you know, this is one heck of an intimidation technique. And then he stopped and he was like, yo, check this out. And this is what he told me. I remember this. I don't care what you want to do in Nigeria. Rob, steal, murder. I don't care. You just got to pay me to get in.
Oh my gosh. That's insane.
All I wanted was some movies. I wanted some movies.
Right.
And then he was like, look, you lead this guy here with me. And I'll give you one of my guys, like, to take you, do whatever you want to do, and bring you back. And I was like, wow, this is a conundrum I did not plan on, right? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, the guy who's just extorting me has just told me that the person I'm with and I'd put my trust in is going to kill me. And then he's like, now I'll give you this guy who will take you in and bring you back safe. And I'm like, you know, I never thought about dying until I met this guy. I never even thought about dying until I met you. And somehow I don't seem like I'm very safe with like you. And then the only person who knows I'm here at this border, you've handcuffed and whipped. I was like, you know, let me just take the handcuffed and whipped guy.
Yeah.
And I'll try my luck with him. I was like, maybe like he'll feel good that I saved him from slavery and potential like death. So he was like, all right, y'all go. And he said, but I'll send this guy with you to get you across the border. And whenever you come back to the other side, go to the fat fish lady.
Uh-huh.
Call me and then I'll send somebody else to get you. To bring you back. I was like, all right. So then he uncuffs the guy. The guy thanks him, thanks me. And as we're going out, the assistant to like the security officer grabs me by the back of my pants like Frog Mart, like, and frog marches me out and down like the street, like
a know, criminal.
Yeah, like grabbing me by the back of my pants, pulling me up, frog marching me down the street.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God. In my head, I'm thinking, maybe I made the wrong decision.
Right.
In all of the movies I've seen, this is like happens before people get executed. But apparently what he was doing was acting like he was arresting me to take me past all the other more senior people. So when we got to the other side, he let me go. So then I'm like, this is great.
Yeah,
that's over. Now I'm just going to hop on this bus, this Matatu, this minivan, and ride to Lagos. Whoa, was I wrong? So there is a lot of police and Nigeria, police and military in Nigeria. So like there were so many police stops between where I was and where I wanted to go. Like, uh-huh. So,
right.
Like there would be a police stop. That's the police stop. And then you're at the police stop looking and like maybe 100 yards down, there is a military stop. And then maybe another 100 yards down, there is a special, special branch military stop. And then maybe like a couple of hours down, there's the army. So every time you get there, the bus stops and then the people walk around the bus and look in. So the first time I was like, I'm gonna sit on the outside by the window. As soon as they saw me, they was like, oh no, oh no, oh no, what is this? Get down, what is this? You are arrested. I was like, for what? They was like, you're not Nigerian. You don't have any papers, you're arrested. So then I had to go back into my pockets and pay. And like,
right.
It was like that for so long. Just every stop, get down, you are arrested. I was arrested like 17 times on that trip. I was like, dang, you would think that it would be like easier on a black dude in Africa. But I think like, unfortunately, just black Americans, we're targets everywhere.
Yeah, apparently.
We're targets for arrest everywhere. But that happened until, like, eventually we got to, like, the Capitol, got the Lagos. I got out. We went to a market, man. If you haven't been to African markets, yo, it's a whole story amongst itself. But I went to the shop. I bought, like, 15 cassettes. So now I'm like, oh, man, now I got to pee. I got to pee. I got to pee. I'm looking around. It's no bathrooms and whatnot. And people are, you know, it's like, yo, people are peeing and like, yo, hey.
Right.
We're men. I'm an African man. I should be able to pee wherever I want to pee. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I start to pee. The guy peeing next to me looks at me, waits until I stop. And then he's like, hey, why are you peeing here? I'm an undercover police officer. You're arrested. I was like, dude, you were peeing here first. Was this like a sting? Is this a setup? I don't know what's going on. But like now the dude who I was with, you know, we were talking, and of course you know what it was. I gave the guy a little bit more money. I gave him some more Naira. That's what they call it in Nigeria, Naira.
Right.
I gave him a little bit more Naira. So now we're finished. I'm thinking about all going back, and I was like, this is going to suck. Another more 17 stops on the way back to the spot. And what ended up happening was we just got lucky. As we were waiting for the Matatus and the minivans, a Peugeot station wagon came up. And so an aside about traveling in Africa, you have different modes. You have like the big buses, regular buses,
right,
like people usually see. Then you have minivans, call them Matatus. They can be like the 16 passengers or like the 27 passengers. Then you have the station wagon, the Peugeot station wagons. And those are still like taxis. Those are more expensive because it's supposed to be quicker, a little bit more comfortable. We were waiting. A Peugeot came in. At the same time, a bus came up. And there was an army guy who was standing there with us. And he went to get on the bus, and we went get in the car, and the dude I was with told the army guy, I was like, yo, check this out. If you want, why don't you ride with us? We're just going to buy the whole car, and like you just ride out with us, and then we'll stop on the way, we'll feed you and whatnot. And the dude was like, cool. So he got in the car and rode with us. So on the way back, at every stop, every stop, all 17 of the police stops.
Yeah.
Get stopped. They'd look in. They'd salute. He'd salute. They'd say something to each other, and bam, we would keep going. Yeah, it took me like 4 hours, like maybe right, 4 or 5 hours to get to Lagos from the border and like 45 minutes to get back.
That's insane.
Yo, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. I was like, yo, Nigeria, I'm never coming back alone. Like, never. But, and then the funny thing is, so we got back and it worked just like he said it, man. We found the fat lady selling fish.
Right.
Like, she pulled out a cell phone, called the guy. He came over on a moped. And this time I got back on the moped and he sped back. Like to where the banda was with the boss who let me through and handcuffed and beat the guy earlier and whipped the guy earlier. And once we got there, you know, the guy was nice. He was like, how's your trip? Did you enjoy yourself? I'm glad you're here. Oh, you got movies? Check this out. Let me send you a car where you can hide the movies. So if you get stopped, like nobody's going to ask you about, you know, what do they call that? Illegal importing? I don't know, but like, you know, smuggling. Right, right. That's it. Smuggling. He was like, hey, you can get caught for smuggling. So here, take this car. So he hooked me up with a taxi driver and a taxi. So now this taxi had a special compartment underneath where you could put like illegal things. So if the car got stopped and searched, you can't see like the contraband easily, or you can't find it easily. So they stuffed all my movies there under in the car, paid the car driver, gave the big boss Nigerian guy a hug. You know what I'm saying? He was like, hey, come back anytime you want, American. Good doing business with you. Got back in the car and went back to like Benin that evening. Had a couple of shots of some alcohol, and then ended up in the club that night.
I have questions for you.
All right,
let's start with this. Explain to me how you explained to him how you quote unquote had no more money, yet you could afford to buy all these movies you came back with.
Well, you know, the thing is, everybody knows that there's more money. Like, there's always more money. Like,
right.
But have more money is a way for you. Like, whenever I'm like, I don't have any more money, that's a signal for me to be like, is that enough? Please say that's enough. And then the guy's like, okay, I'm satisfied with what you gave me. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the business deal is done.
How did you know that you could trust the dude? Like, when he was saying, oh, yeah, let's bring this army dude who you don't know, and we're going to get you and him and me alone in a private car?
I didn't. But, like, again, at this time, everything was over. I was like, shit, I'm going home. I was like, they could have kidnapped, murdered me, done all this thing. I was like, if they kidnap me and kill me and take the movies now, like, in some ways, I deserve it for just being so stupid.
Were the movies worth it?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely, man. I remember when I took the movies back to Kenya, we were watching them. And, like, again, this was like 98. Like, even like all of Africa hadn't been introduced to the beauty and the wonder and the creativity of Nigerian movies.
So let's go ahead and go back into this, you know, and let's do this quickly because we're running short on time here. If you could retell this story, what would you change about it? How would it be different?
If I could retell the story.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, what facts or details would you change about this story?
I don't know, man. Actually, nothing. I don't know. Okay. If I was going to change any facts or details about the story, I would add more drama. So, no, seriously, I would have myself being kidnapped.
Yeah.
I have myself being kidnapped. And in the process of me being kidnapped, I would learn to speak Igbo, and I would form a relationship with a young Igbo woman there. She would help save me. Like, and then once we got free, I would find out that her father is a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, and he's won something. Like, I don't know. I would just need to hop it up some, like, because that used to be my best story. Like, whenever I'd go to a new job, I would tell people this story, and it would amaze folks. So check this out. Upstate New York. So when I moved here to upstate New York,
right,
I'm telling you, like, this story kills people from upstate New York. Like, if you find somebody who's lived in upstate New York their whole life, they're like, oh my God, what? Like, it's a great story.
I have one last question for you regarding this story before we end this. What would have happened if the quote-unquote fat lady hadn't been there? What if she had, like, gone home for the night or something?
I don't know! I might still be in Nigeria, dude! Like, I don't know, man. Like, I have no idea. I love all Africa. I love it. I was there for 12 years, man. I love it. My kids were born there. My first two wives were African women. I love it. But they sold us into slavery a long time ago. And sometimes I'd be scared if the economic situation get too bad, they might start looking at me as another economic opportunity.
Oh my god!
No, Nigeria. If the fat lady was, I have no idea. Like, if my wife is a God fearing, praying woman, you know, and she might be like, you know, if God would have took his eye off you for a minute, if he would have just blinked, while you on that trip, you would have been kidnapped. So actually, I have no idea, man. That was actually, looking back, when I look back on it, it was probably like one of the more stupid and reckless things that I've done in my life. Like, going to Nigeria with no passport and no documents illegally in 1988 with like nobody but yourself. Yeah. No doubt. Reckless.
Wait. Damn, I have two more questions. I need to add this because we're running long, but I have two more questions. Okay. First, let's try to make these short. First, what if you had your documents? Would that have made things easier? Would you have been able to gotten in legally and not have to pay where they have extorted you?
I don't know. If I'd have just went in on my passport, I'd just walked up to the border and they'd have been like, where are you going? I'd have been like, near Nigeria. How many days? And they would have just stamped it and I'd have went across. But I did not have my passport because they kept it. The Ivory Coast government kept my passport until we left.
Oh, okay.
Because we weren't supposed to leave the country.
Got it. Okay, that was the key detail that I was missing. And what would have happened if you had ran out of money? Would you still be in Nigeria? Is that...
Yep, yep. I would probably be like somebody's houseboy currently.
Ah, I see.
Like, I'd still maybe like in working off my plane ticket. I have no idea.
So now, as we're winding down, we have two traditions on this podcast that we'd like to adhere to at the end of every episode. The first is we like to highlight a charity or an organization for the Revisionaries to support. Usually, we try to pick something that our guest is passionate about. Do you have a charity or an organization that you're passionate about?
I do, man. I am passionate about Save the Children Sudan, Save the Children U.S. in the Sudan, or just Save the Children U.S. I worked for Save the Children U.S. for 2 years. And yeah, I was the first Black American ever in the Nuba Mountains in the South Sudan. So I love the work that they do, man. It's actually cool. Stuff like immunizations, school feeding programs, health programs, man, we built health clinics, nutrition, all types of stuff. So, man, it's weird. It's a big charity, but it's close to my heart because I still like know people who work there, and it's a place where we actually can say, like, I can actually say I've seen them save lives and have a really big effect, positive effect on the community.
That is amazing. That's a great cause. Thank you for sharing that with us. The last tradition that we have on this podcast is we like to ask our guests to share a quick, keyword being quick, story from their childhood that puts a smile on their face or just makes them feel warm inside whenever they think about it. So first thing that comes to mind.
First thing that comes to mind is I don't have anything quick. Oh, I know. Fried chicken and watermelon.
What about it?
Well, like, it's one of my favorite dishes, and my mom really is good at making fried chicken and watermelon. So whenever, like, I see fried chicken or think of fried chicken and watermelon, it makes me think of my mom. Like, whenever I was sad or had bad days and whatnot, she'd be like, here, I know you like this, and she would give me fried chicken and watermelon. And I don't know, it's a short story. It's probably the shortest thing I could say. And maybe it comes up a lot because it's been times where I've, like, here they were going to do an event. They were going to have a rally for some Black people. And In it, one of the things they highlighted was there going to be fried chicken and watermelon. And everybody got upset. And then they changed the menu. And it was like tofu and like kava, some healthy stuff. And I was thinking, like, is it because I was just upset because I was like, dang, now I was planning on having something good that reminded me of home that was actually tasty. And now I'm having something that is just foreign and like, ugh, like, why? Like, why is it that their stereotypes made me not be able to enjoy fried chicken and watermelon? Like, somebody had just planned a nice meal. like it was a good meal just turned into something stereotypical. So I have no idea if that answered your question. I don't even know if it's quick. I just
Sorry. That's perfect. No, that was perfect. I want to say thank you for coming on. I'm sure the Revisionaries enjoyed listening from you. Before I let you go, do you have any last word for the Revisionaries?
Yeah, man. Revisionary Podcast, shout out to you. Check me out. Kenneth McLaurin, comedian. That's what I'm in, all my social media stuff. And then make sure you go ahead and check it out. Black As Trivia. BLACKAS Trivia. Check out the theme song. It's hot. Even my mom likes it, so you know it's good.
No, that's perfect. I want to again thank you again for coming on the podcast, and take care. Have a good day.
Peace out. You too, Juan Carlos. The Revisionary
Podcast. That was a what can I say? That was a wild story. I mean, look, I told you I love talking to Kenneth, man. Kenneth is full of stories, and that was wild. But it was cool too, because, you know, I got to learn about a different culture and the way things work in different countries. So that was pretty cool. I mean, I don't know that I would have risked it all for a movie, but apparently those movies are really, really good. I'm gonna have to go ahead and find some of those movies he's talking about and watch them. I feel like now I need the context behind the movies that he's describing, because I want to know what movie he risks his life for. That's the movie I want to watch in particular. But whatever. It has always been a pleasure to have you guys on, and I love listening. Well, rather, I love that you guys tune in every week and listen to me. And I'd like to say, Revisionaries, as always, thank you for listening. This is